I think we got some of the best early season fishing, you know, going around. Like you got, especially when the fish get up into the shallows and start chasing frogs and start worming and that type of thing. You know, some really exciting fishing.
I try to encourage beginners to head out, you know, in this sort of September, October, even pushing November, because it is when you can find the fish kind of lined up, or it's quite predictable there, especially in the wild rivers. So, you know, the water's absolutely pumping, they sit in predictable areas and they're quite willing to eat flies here this time of year.
We're looking pretty, like it's an odd one this year. Like we've had good rain recently, but we had super dry, like rest of sort of Victoria, super dry. Autumn was a non-event from a rainfall point of view. So where like streams aren't exactly high, put it that way.
Is it a good quality fishing at that time of year?
Mate, absolutely. One of the joys of the Tumut is you can pick it apart in many different ways. The mainstay would be the indicator nymphing. You know, love it or hate it, it's a fantastic way to get out there and into fish from anglers of all abilities. There will be some opportunities.
G'day and welcome to another installment of the Fly Fishers podcast.
Since 1967, we've been spreading the bug of fly fishing at our Melbourne fly shop.
Join us as we celebrate the fun of fly fishing and chat with characters that enjoy it as much as we do.
Whether you're just starting out or have some experience, we hope our ego-free commentary helps demystify fly fishing and inspires you to visit new places and try new techniques. Season opens this weekend, Andrew.
It certainly is opening, and a lot of anticipation out there, mate.
Mate, I'm bloody excited. Customers are excited. The shop's pumping. It's great.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. You know, like I feel like you forget about it every year, and then it's like, oh, here it is. Yeah. Like the river's running water again. Everyone's excited.
1 minute we're talking about flogging streamers on lakes, the next minute I'm selling parachute atoms and hero nymphs.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, that's probably been the most incredible part, I reckon, in the last couple of weeks, is the number of hero nymphing outfits that we've sold. People are wise to the fact that early season normally translates to higher water, and techniques like hero nymphing are the most productive way of fishing that sort of water, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, indicator fishing's great,
but
that euro nymphing, controlling your drift, controlling the depth, you can't beat it. Like,
yeah, and you know, I guess still for a lot of people, the euro nymphing gear, they may not have taken the plunge into it yet. You know, they've done the indicator nymphing before, they've got their normal overhead casting setups all sorted, but the euro nymphing, you know, now's the time to test the water, so to speak, and get into it.
Absolutely. And I think that price barrier has moved a lot for euro nymphing gear.
Big time.
You can get into that for like around $400 now, like a full euro nymphing setup. And then you can get a bloody good euro nymphing setup for $1,300.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
You know,
it sounds like we're launching straight into some product placement here. But there are a lot of options in euro outfits for people that are wanting to give it a go. We've got some of those Vision Fizu 2 euro nymphing outfits on the way as well. We're waiting still for the new Primal Zen. So they could be out much later in the season, sadly, when water levels may have dropped by then and euro nymphing may not be as productive as it's going to be come opening. So, the Fizu 2 is the entry level into those euro nymphing outfits.
That's right. I think you can definitely still euro nymph in the middle of the season, but it's the middle of the season's when you want that excitement of dry fly fishing, right?
So totally.
Don't think you're just buying a euro nymphing outfit and 2 months into the season, you're going to write it off and not use it again.
Yeah. And I think, you know, most people are pretty privy to the fact that a lot of people are carrying around two outfits these days. So when they get to that deeper, faster flowing water, the most productive way of fishing that may be euro nymphing. They string up their euro rod and get into it and get results.
Yeah, bloody oath. I mean, you can deliver a small fly to a significant depth, which can really make a difference on pressured water, like the Goulburn especially.
Definitely, yeah. I think the other thing worth noting is that those more traditional techniques or the techniques that we know and love, don't discount them. You know, I think in higher water, it does have a tendency to concentrate the fish into that slower moving stuff, in particular the edges. And that's where dry dropper can be particularly effective. So don't go out with the blinkers on. is what I would say to people. You know, I think it pays to be a well-rounded angler early season.
That's right. We still get midge hatches and things like that at this time of year. So don't write your small dry fly fishing off and things like that, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, look, everything's shaping up pretty well out there. I think, you know, probably slightly lower water levels to what we've had over the last few seasons. The warmth in the air is just going to it's really going to kick things off early, isn't it? You have to presume.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Like insects, they know this change in temperatures coming before we do. And, you know, you'll hear from Cam later on this podcast, you know, he's seeing ants in the ground with wings already, which is insane.
It is.
We've just come out of winter and we're talking about ant hatches already.
Yeah. Yeah. So look, you know, this podcast is going to be looking at a crystal ball to a certain degree. But we've been lucky enough to chat with some guys on the ground that are very experienced. You know, we've got, first up, we're going to be chatting with Finn McDowell down in Tassie. Then, of course, we've got Scotty Xanthalakis of Wilderness Fly Fishing. We've got Cam McGregor of River Escapes and Jimmy Barwick of Snowy Valleys Fly Fishing. So we've really gone to the brains trust with this episode.
It's quite a star-studded lineup.
It is, isn't it? It is.
Heavy hitters.
I reckon, you know, like if I could pick the experts in each respected area, I can't think of better guys to talk to. They're also just so generous with their knowledge. So, to those guys, first of all, to the listeners, keep listening because there is some absolute gold coming up. But obviously to those blokes, thank you so much for chatting with us and sharing your expertise with the listeners of the Fly Fishers podcast.
Absolutely.
Is there anything that we really need to discuss as far as early season fishing, or should we just kick into these interviews? And because we do kind of tick most of the things off throughout these interviews.
Yeah, I reckon we should kick into it.
All right. Well, actually, before we do that, let's just quickly discuss trout seasons. The trout season is there for a reason. Trout need the opportunity to spawn and I guess have a rest from anglers to do so. The seasons throughout Australia are quite different. The first season to close is down in Tasmania. I believe that is the start of May. And then it reopens at the start of August. So it's the first one to get going every year. And so we kind of start getting reports flowing in from our friends down in Tassie come start of August. And then we closely follow that, being the first Saturday in September, being this weekend coming up. And then New South Wales is a month later, again, at the start of October. I think it's the 3rd of October this year. Funnily enough, the New South Wales season actually shuts at the same time that the Victorian one does on Queen's Birthday weekend in June. So it's a little bit longer season. But there's people that really know their stuff that are have done their research, and they know that the majority of fish are going to be spawning within that gap. So that is why there's a closed season at that time, and it is important for everyone to respect that. And it only helps build the anticipation anyway. You know, when these rivers open, it's good.
And when you've got lakes as good as you can be in New South Wales and our Western lakes here, and there's lakes in Tassie, like you can fish a Great Lake over winter. I mean, it's cold, but you can, there's fishing to tide the time over. Anyway, this isn't a lake fishing podcast, but.
But I think it's worth noting that, yes, there are lakes that close. So down in Tassie, for instance, you know, people still wait patiently for the lakes to reopen come the opening of the trout season because, you know, as Finn's about to tell you all, it can be bloody spectacular and incredibly good sight fishing in some of those highland lakes when the season gets going. So it's not all about rivers. There are a lot of lakes that reopen as well. This podcast is primarily about early season fishing, you know, the start of the season and as things get going and warming up. So, I think that kind of covers that pretty well, but let's get into it. We'll have a chat to Finn McDowell down in Tassie. Mate, it's really great to get you on to the podcast. Obviously, you're based in Ulverston, is it? Is that how it's pronounced?
Yeah, Ulverston. Yeah, that's correct. Up on the northwest coast. Yep.
Bloody good spot to be in Tasmania, right? For good close proximity to trout fishing.
Yeah, I mean, the Highland Lakes are, what, an hour and a half away. I got Taubert's 50 minutes away. You know, a heap of really nice rivers as well. It's kind of a good spot to live, really.
Absolutely, mate. So I'm sure it's with a lot of anticipation as the trout season opens. What is it, the first Saturday in August, is it? Or when
That's correct. Yeah. So, well, we're about a month or so into it now.
Good, mate.
And so far, there's been mixed results. So a couple of lakes that usually do fire, they haven't. Like I know Bronte and Little Pine and that type of thing have been a bit slow at the kickoff. But other lakes like Penstock and Four Springs, a lot of quality fish have been coming out of there. So, you know, where there's bad waters, there's always some good ones. So
good, mate. I think, you know, for us Victorians that know bugger all, you kind of think Tassie's more or at least the Highlands of Tassie is a summertime fishery. But would you rate it as an early season option?
Oh, I think we got some of the best early season fishing, you know, going around. Like you got, especially when the fish get up into the shallows and start chasing frogs and start worming and that type of thing, you know, some really exciting fishing.
It makes for some pretty good sight fishing too.
Hey, oh, man. Unreal. Yeah, when the fish are right up in the shallows, with the high water, yeah, it's really good.
Do you need sun for that style of fishing too, mate?
No, I'd say early morning overcast is probably the best conditions for seeing tailing fish. You know, you want that lower light. They feel safer coming in close to the shore. And obviously you're looking for their tails and fins and ripples, movement, that type of thing in the water.
It needs to be calm then, does it? Like wind can be a bit of an enemy there.
Wind in my like, what's the word, experience, I've always found it better to be calm for tailing fish. I have on some occasions, like I think I had a session up in Pine Tier one time and the water was right up in the tussocks and that type of stuff and it was blowing its face off, but there was still fish with their tails hanging out of the water, you know, when it was blowing. So it's really just depends, you know, what fishing's like.
Yeah. And on a lee shore in that case, on Pine Tier?
Lee shore. Lee shore's always the go, I'd say, for finding tailing fish on lakes, that is, yeah.
Cool, mate. So for you, early season, is that kind of the thing that you get most excited about, those tailing fish?
Oh, that is pretty exciting. However, fishing out of a boat, like lock style on the lakes, that can be really fun as well, like really aggressive streamer eats and that type of thing can be also a lot of fun, like fish coming up and eating your flies on the hang and that type of thing. You know, it's some really cool stuff.
Yeah, the early season fishing is quite different to that you might get later in spring and through summer. How do you approach the early season fishing?
So as for lakes, you know, I'll be hitting my early mornings and that type of thing, looking for tailing fish. You know, I really try and just pick the weather as best I can. But then, you know, if the weather is no good, that doesn't mean the fishing's not going to be good. Like, you can always go and find a windy shore and wade out a little bit and flog a couple of streamers around. You know, that always produces pretty well, on most lakes, depending on the time of year.
And you guys have copped a fair battering of rain and wind over the last couple of days.
We've been absolutely smashed.
But you actually seem surprisingly positive about that.
The rivers usually blow up every year. I know these last couple of years they've been really wet, so you know, it's nothing out of the ordinary. It's just that we've had it all at once, pretty much.
Right. So, because it did get fairly dry there, like the water levels in the lakes through winter,
they opened up the Brayley's chain just because it wasn't, you know, the other lakes were so low and that type of thing, which never really happens, opening lakes like that.
Is there going to be any impact through the season, do you think, because of the lack of water?
I think it will affect the brown trout spawning run this year, definitely, because we didn't have that rain around that crucial time. Very low numbers coming up the Great Lake Canal there. So they've had to, you know, get fish from other lakes like Arthur's and King William and that type of thing.
If you're tackling a lake early season, you mentioned early mornings, so that's primarily going to be chasing those tailing fish.
Yeah, mate. Yep.
Yeah. So do you plan your day out as such that you're up early, you try and nail a few tailing fish, and then it's flogging streamers through the core part of the day when the sun's a little bit higher, or how do you?
Yeah, look, like, again, it depends on your day. So you can have tailing fish right till 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, and it just depends, really. I know they almost sometimes they'll tail for a full day, but then you know other times the sun will come up and they'll disappear off the shores and you can just start flogging some streamer patterns and they'll come to those.
What would your top three tailing fish lakes be early season?
Oh, okay.
Without giving all the secrets away.
Little pine's always a good one. And then it'd have to be Talbots. That usually fires up about November.
Okay. A little bit later.
They start moving in there a bit more, but that's some crazy fishing early morning and that type of stuff in there. The third one. Yeah, it'd be either Bronte or Penstock. Penstock's probably a little bit underrated as a tailing fishery, but in the mornings they get right up into the strackweed and, you know, that type of thing, feeding on canids and like midging and that type of thing. So, you know, there's just so many options here, I guess. It's hard to pick three.
Yeah, yeah. We put some pressure on you there, didn't we, mate?
Because yeah.
What is there? There's thousands of lakes in Tasmania, so to nail it to three is a hard thing to do. But
yeah, yeah.
No, that's good, mate. And when these rivers do drop a little bit and the water clears, where are you going to head?
The fishing in the rivers now can be all right. When the rivers flood, especially up on the northwest coast here with all the farming land and that type of stuff, the water can flood into the drainage culverts and irrigation culverts, and the fish will actually move into those looking for worms and that type of stuff. So you basically got a little lake with tailing fish on it on the side of a river.
So, yes, mate, that sounds to me that piques my interest in a big way because
you got to really time it, but if you do time it, mate, it can be unreal.
And with the timing factor, though, like are you saying immediately after rain?
So a rising river is generally the go-to because that's when the water gets over the new ground and those fish come up into the edges and that type of thing.
Wicked.
And Finn, just on flies for tailing fish, what's your maybe three go-to flies for them?
Yeah, okay. So my flies, because I'm a comp fisherman, they're probably going to be a little bit different to everyone else's, but so
thanks for for recognizing that comp fishermen are a little different.
Oh shit, yeah, you gotta be. There's no way you can be a normal bloke. I've had a lot of success on like a dialback, so that's an English English buzzer pattern. So, yeah, fish that.
Red body or green body, mate?
Green body. I've tied with a copper rib as well. That works well. I like to either that or a 007. That's a cracking tailing fish fly. Right. So that's just a little snail imitation. The 007, I forgot about that. That's a really good fly for tailing fish. I like to fish that under like a Zulu or something like that.
Yep.
Like nice black, because in those sort of, you know, darker conditions in the morning and that type of stuff, a black fly on like the greyish white water will stand out really well.
You can see it easy, yeah.
Yeah, you can see it really well.
Yeah,
big bushy black fly, and then I tie.
Does it get eaten often, mate? The dry?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, they'll come up for that all the time. It also depends what they're feeding on as well. Like if they're solely got their heads in the dirt, then they're probably not going to come up for it. But if they're just booching around, there's every chance they will. So
epic.
Yeah, and then I fish. So the 007 or Dahlback or a stick cast or something like that, about 15 centimetres underneath that dry fly.
Yep.
Just so as soon as it's taken, it goes straight under and you're straight onto it.
Do you, a lot of walking involved for that fishing?
No, not really. you can literally pull up at the little pine car park, walk 50 metres to the water and you'll fucking find them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about your nymphing techniques on the rivers as they start to get going? Is it pretty productive?
Oh, yeah, mate. Nymphing's always productive. European nymphing, nymph under dry. All those techniques work really well as the rivers start to drop. I don't know, early season on the Mersey, for example, fishing the slower pools with sort of a long nymph under dry rig can also be really productive on those rainbows that are sort of hanging out. In those slower pools, they haven't moved up into the fast water yet. Pretty good.
And just important to get your flies into that the slower current seams and that kind of thing, would you say?
Yeah, definitely. Our rivers would be similar to yours. You know, earlier in the season, those fish are hanging in the slower water. You know. Less oxygenated, less cold, you know, sort of what you call wintering water, I guess.
Yep. Good, mate. And another, I guess, feature of some of this early season fishing down in Tasmania that a lot of people talk about is sea run trout, or even, yes. You know, resident fish that are feeding on things like white bait. How important is the timing for that? Fishing.
Yeah, so I personally, I haven't done a great deal of it. I know there are some guys that love that stuff and that's all they're keen for. But so in my experience and what I've heard from other people, like there's a certain time. So sort of we're about to come into the season now. So about September through to start of November is sort of the time the white bait run. So that's what the sea run trout fishing is driven on, is the white bait. The white bait moving up the rivers to spawn and the fish follow them. So yeah, you're chasing the white bait. The white bait runs really.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess a bit of, you know, local knowledge and being in touch with people on the ground too.
100%. That's like anywhere though.
Yeah. Do you find the I guess Tassie locals pretty willing to open up when it is actually happening?
Yeah. It depends who you talk to. generally people are all right, willing to share. There'll be very few that won't, and you know where to tell them to go.
Good, mate. And Finn, you know, just to sort of close things out a little bit, mate, you're going to be doing a bit of guiding for us through the season. We're still welcome to send clients down to you for the ultimate Tassie experience.
I don't know about ultimate, but I'll try my best. I'm still very open to that. So if anyone wants to come and have a crack, then more than welcome.
Good, mate. Yeah. No, your skill set and, you know, obviously willingness to share and access to some great fishing down there in Tassie is second to none, mate. So we know that anyone we send down your way is just going to have the most incredible experience and really get a taste of Tasmania. So, mate, we love working with you and we really, really appreciate you giving us a bit of a wrap up of the opening season fishing down there in Tassie.
No problems at all.
Good on you, mate. Good luck on that job site there today. Don't work too hard.
Yeah, I'll try not to.
Make sure you get another smoko in about an hour's time.
Yeah, I will. I'll try and convince the foreman. I don't know how that will go.
good on you, mate. Great to chat.
All right. Too easy.
See you, man.
See ya.
That fishing just sounds absolutely phenomenal. I think I need to book my flight.
I'm fizzing for that too, hey.
I mean, you can't go past sight fishing, and to have access to it basically as soon as the season opens, it's amazing.
Yeah. It is, yeah. And, yeah, as we Finn kind of went on about there, it's underrated. I think, you know, maybe the cooler temperatures spook a lot of people, but it clearly it's as good a time of year to get down to Tasmania as any.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks again, Finn, for that, mate. It was really great to catch up with you. And now we're going to move on to Scotty X from Wilderness Fly Fishing. Scotty, of course, he guides out of Marysville through the season. Probably, you know, one of the busier guides in Australia, I would say. He has it really well wired. He doesn't care if he's fishing pressured water. He's one of the better guides and has a great team on his hands there with Wilderness Fly Fishing. So let's cut over to Scotty now and learn a bit more about what's happening in northeast Victoria in the Eildon catchment.
It's looking incredible. The water level is at 8.83.
Lies.
I had no an idea. Because I've been on lakes and lakes and lakes every day. So, and then Christmas Island. So I was like, I should check out the river levels. I did actually have a look at, I've been keeping a lookout on the Golden River, which is the most important river for opening, I think. So,
yeah.
And that looked like it bumped up to a sort of 5,000, quite a big flow.
Yeah.
I've just been keeping an eye on it. And I believe last time I checked, it was probably 4 days ago. And I'm going to say it was around 2,800. So it's shaping up to look really good for opening. So,
yeah, that'd be kind of ideal if they held it at that, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I think around that sort of 3,000 openings up to about and dropping away a little bit. Yeah, it should even produce some dry fly fishing if it pulls back below 2,000. So,
good, mate.
I'll check it out. Yeah.
Nice. Do you personally get quite excited when the opening of the season rolls around?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Being on lakes and in the cold weather and then the, you know, spring kicks in. The river's usually a bit higher this time of year, but yeah, I get excited to hit the flowing stuff. There's no doubt about that. Yeah.
Good, mate. Get those, dust off those squirmy worms.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm a fishing guy, but I only use dry fly.
Scotty, what's your plan of attack on the Goulburn early in the season? Obviously, it depends on flow rates, but let's talk about maybe that ideal 3,000.
Yeah, 3,000. So straight away, I am thinking to catch fish, nymphing. So we're looking at European nymphing. And if you're not doing the European nymphing thing, I would lean towards indicator nymph fishing. So, you know, just a pretty standard nine foot meter, but then some really fine tippet coming off a strike indicator and fishing down quite deep. So I'm thinking, you know, it's around 6 foot under that indicator, 5X, 6X tippet under that. And yeah, just running two nymphs below the indicator or European nymphing, yeah, that's going to get you a few fish for sure.
Two nymphs, how, you know, talk us through those flies.
So this time of year, I was just talking to a bloke who sent me an email. I'm heading out this weekend. What flies should I use? And I'm always thinking something with a bit of colour. So things with metallic, I like metallic pink beads this time of year on your flies, or jig tags, so pink jig tags or anything that has a tag, fluoro jig tags are good. And then if you want to head down that way, if you're that inclined, obviously a squirmy worm. But probably in the Goulburn, I don't really use squirmies. I tend to use really small nymphs. So,
do you prefer the natural colour in the squirmy being fluorescent pink?
Fluorescent pink. Yeah, absolutely. Like, as you saw, you haven't seen my filling the order to you, but, yeah, I think I ordered, I don't know, 3 dozen bright pink squirmies. It's the only squirmy to have.
Really. You're exposed.
There is. I did see Fulling Mill, and I'm not sure if you'll stock at the shop, but you probably should. But they had a new colour out, which I'm excited to use, which is kind of like an orangey brown colour. So
we got
like a rust colour. Have you got them?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. So you're 3 steps ahead of me already.
Welcome to the party.
Yeah. So they look really good. So I'm sure people will have some success. But really, in the goal, but I'm thinking, you know, those two nymphs being a size 12, about a 3.2 mil on the top. And then on the point fly being something small, 16, but with still with a metallic pink feed, but, you know, a pheasant tail, something or other. Yeah, something like that.
It's a lot of fly on the point.
Yeah, when, it's really strange this year. When I'm euro nymphing, I use the heavier fly on the point. But when I'm trailing a fly under indicator, I don't know why, but I love that a smaller trailing fly. So swimming more natural and keep it about 50 centimetres behind the heavy nymph. I just find it just works well. I've played around with putting the heavy fly on the point because I do fish in line, so I don't fish with dropper tags. So I'm just tying straight to the shank. So yep. I think when I'm not using dropper tags, it does affect the eat if you've got a heavy fly on the point.
Cool, so, yeah, man. That's a great tip.
Around. Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely something worth trying. I'll give that a go too.
Yeah.
Smaller fly on the point. And yeah, it seems like the smaller fly, because this time of year, most of you may fly on the goal, but are really small. So delivering that small fly down in deeper water or faster water seems to be the go.
And what would your plan of attack be for the smaller streams, the tributaries of the Goulburn and things like that?
Yeah, and that is that dirty work thing called that dirty squirmy worm. Yeah. So,
yeah, the 2-inch pink nymph.
Yeah, so I will be. I'm on the first week of guiding, so I should know what the river levels are doing, shouldn't I? But generally, you know they're going to be kind of high. So whether they're clear and high or slightly dirty. I usually run two rods when I'm guiding, so I've got just nymph under dry still and work the edges, like the inside edges, with, just nymph under dry. Keep it really simple, stupid. And then for those heavier shoots or slightly deeper water, then I will go indicator and a single squirmy worm. You know, 4 foot under, even 4 or 5 foot under, even your smaller streams, quite a long dropper under the indicator.
Do you find the fish quite willing early season?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I try to encourage beginners to head out, you know, in this sort of September, October, even pushing November, because it is when you can find the fish kind of lined up, or it's quite predictable there, especially in the wild rivers. So, you know, the water's absolutely pumping, they sit in predictable areas and they're quite willing to eat flies here this time of year.
Cool, mate. And do you think fishing traffic, you know, obviously you're probably at the more immediate trout streams and guide in that area from Melbourne. Do you find the fishing traffic to be an issue at all early season, or because the rivers do carry a bit more water, maybe the fish not as flighty?
That's a good question, because a lot of people, obviously everyone gets excited and wants to head out to the rivers for opening. But I find the traffic it's spread out. Particularly on the Goulburn, it does attract more lure and bait angles. So the wild streams, the smaller stuff, you find more fly angles on them. But I get excited about this time of year, because there's a lot of rivers that I fish that generally by summer they're too low. So it's good for me to hit those early season rivers, we call them. And that's what I'll be focusing in on for opening for myself and the clients that are heading out. Yeah, just there's a bunch of, you know, by December, they're just about too low. So those rivers can contain really good numbers of fish. Yeah. So, but I'm really not fussed with anglers on the water. Like, it happens, we see them, especially if you get to fish the Stevenson, the Rubik and the Gulf and those big three. But I find, generally speaking, and I don't know, I'm going to sound a bit like a wanker here, but generally most people fish them poorly. So many times I've dropped behind other anglers and you have just as good as a time as you're fishing solo up in the mount. So, yeah, don't worry too much about traffic. Just fish the right way and you'll catch fish.
And a big part of that is getting the right help. And, you know, obviously you as a guide, you can kind of dial people in to the technique that you need to be fishing and fishing well in order to get those sort of results in pressured water.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We have Daniel Ringer, who works for us now. He's a member of the Australian fly fishing team. And you find guys like those guys, like Tom Jarman, all those guys, tend to like to fish pressured water in a way, because it makes them better anglers. But they head out, you know, Daniel will fish behind me, and I consider myself an average angler, but he's really good. And he'll fish behind me and catch fish, you know, so that thought, yeah, just fishing the right methods, the right flies. Don't worry too much about anglers. Give everyone a bit of space. But, you know, if someone's gone through an hour or two before, I wouldn't worry about it too much. Just head out.
Good, mate. Are you feeling pretty optimistic about this season ahead?
This is probably, actually, tell you the truth, this is probably the most nervous I felt in terms of fish numbers. We've had an incredible 4 years, probably 5 years, of wet seasons and good flows, and we call them trout years, really. And, I think we had that low water levels in, I guess, April, May this year. So, and then we had the cormorants hit all the rivers. And from what I've been talking to other guys like Matthew Howell up northeast and just for everyone, it seems like the birds just smashed everything and everywhere, you know, every little stream everywhere. So I'm nervous and excited, but I think it's going to be a more challenging year than, especially if it seems like, you know, we've had a dry winter. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm excited.
It might sort the men from the boys in a way. You know, I agree with you. I think we're coming off a time where it was really bumper season, you know, like after season, and people that maybe got into fly fishing in the last 4 years, they've had it pretty good for quite a while. And maybe, you know, this season is the one to for them to progress as fly fishers and learn how to deal with challenging conditions. Would you agree with that to a certain degree?
Absolutely. Yeah. I believe that. And we knew it was coming. We were just, you know, year after year, it's been good. But we've already expected the drought to come or challenging fishing to come. And I think the next 2 or 3 years, we may encounter that. I hope not. I'm always a half glass full kind of guy, but I think, yeah, it could be challenging, you know, where fish may come out, you know, towards dusk on the Goulburn a bit more because they're a bit shy to come out and sit, you know, in the middle of the river sitting up high. So you may have to nymph them a bit better, or yeah, it'll certainly separate the anglers, yeah, the good anglers from the bad anglers, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I think, you know, for the I guess, dare I say, the real fly fishers out there, they'll adapt accordingly, you know, and it just puts that pressure on you to, oh, okay, I actually need to develop as a fly fisher here. What techniques do I need to work at to get the results that I want? And obviously, you know, using a guide like yourself is going to help you develop as a fly fisher and deal with these challenging conditions. So, you know, I'm optimistic in the sense that you're going to be busy, we're going to be busy, because as long as there's trout out there to be caught, you know, people will keep working harder to get them.
Yeah, that's right. That's when, you know, flies may play a part of it, your techniques. Yeah, you have to start to open your mind, because like you said, if you've had, and we've seen it over the last few seasons, you know, the, you know, 50, 60 fish days, you know, were happening, and now we've head up to those streams this season in that challenging period and got a dozen fish. So you can see the change already in those streams. And yeah, I just find it's going to be super, it's going to be challenging. And like I said, it's going to keep us busy, I think. So I'm excited by it. It'll make me guide a bit harder and a bit, you know, it'll make me go into the hills a bit more. So
you might have to get out of bed earlier.
Yeah, get out of bed earlier and, yeah, not fish beside a bridge, which I love doing. So
tell us a bit about the products that you're offering, you know, through this season, mate. Like, you know, you are one of the busiest guides in the country, dare I say. You know, you've got that Northeast Victoria catchment so well dialed and so well covered in terms of, you know, guiding options. For the listeners, just tell us a bit about what you've got on offer there.
Yeah, I guess the highlight over the last season was offering drift boat fishing. So that opens up a lot of water for us, especially like the Goulburn that can, you know, it gets a little bit of pressure. So, and we were pretty keen to sort of drift, you know, below Alexandra last season, but just the water levels were kind of funny. Didn't allow that to happen a lot. So I think we'll, yeah, drift sections that, you know, that's you can't really get to by foot. So that's one thing we offer, is the drift boat fishing. And then I guess just the beginner stuff, like I've been going for quite a while now, but we just love taking out beginners, newbies to the sport. That's one of our highlights, I guess, that we just love doing. And then with a guy like Daniel Ringer now on the team, you know, that European nymphing, which I think is going to produce the most amount of fish early season, is something you definitely want to learn, and we offer that as well.
So from beginner to advanced, you know, able-bodied and able to wade, or wanting to sit back in a boat and, you know, have the fish put in front of you, it really, you've got options for everyone, haven't you?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. For those guys who just love fly fishing, but they can't walk rivers like they used to, the drift boat, it's a fantastic, you know, option. Sight fishing from the boats just last year was off the charts good. Chucking dries, you know, fish tugged in along banks. And then, yeah, and then we've got, you know, if you'd like an adventure, we certainly offer campouts and overnight campouts. So that's from anything, yeah, beginners right through to advanced, yeah, we'll have you covered.
That's great, mate. I think, you know, the fact that you do offer a bespoke kind of package for anglers, depending on what they're wanting to achieve or develop, you know, it really, you do a great job up there, mate, and we love working with you. And of course, you know, people can book directly with you at Wilderness Fly Fishing or in the shop through the Fly Fisher.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. Thanks for the support over the last few years, or it's actually creeping out to 9 years, I had a look. So,
jeez,
yeah,
we're all getting older, aren't we?
Yeah.
How come we're getting older and Peter sitting next to me here is getting younger?
Just fresh. Don't worry about it. We'll pull you down to our level.
Yeah. We'll keep
just
wearing
wait
it.
Five more years. Yeah, and you'll only be casting size 35 dry flies, mate.
good, mate. But, yeah, look, we hope to catch up with you and have a fish through the season, mate, should you have the time. So, yeah, really appreciate you coming back onto the podcast. And, mate, enjoy the opening of the season.
Yeah, I'm excited, and thanks for having me on.
Good on you, mate.
Thanks, Scotty.
Take care, boys. See you,
mate. Scotty, mate, thanks for the chat. That was awesome, hey? It's sounds like it's going to be good up there this year, hey?
Oh, absolutely. And that's probably one of our first trap fisheries out of Melbourne. And
yeah, the proximity's close, isn't it? Anyone can shoot up there for a day over the weekend and still, you know, not need too many brownie points to do it.
Absolutely. And you can definitely spend a couple of days there too. Like that's
And of course, Scotty's got the accommodation option at Marysville.
He's got
there
that
too.
Lodge at Marysville. It's perfect, isn't it?
It is, yeah. But yeah, I'm sure that there's the vast majority of Melbourne-based fly fishers will be shooting up that way for opening and for early season fishing. So really good to get some insight from him on what's happening up there.
We're going to shoot over to Cam McGregor now. Cam is based in the Bright area.
Yeah.
He's
Mudgee-gonga.
Mudgee-gonga. He does a very good job in the sense that he's a fisherman, but he's also a fishery scientist too. So if you want to fish with someone who has the depth of understanding about fish movement and the nitty-gritty science behind why things happen, he is the guy to do it with.
He is, yeah. He looks at fisheries from a perspective that a lot of fishermen don't. So he always has a lot to offer in that respect. And so we couldn't think of anyone to speak of in the Bright area better than Cam. And, yeah, it was really great to catch up with him.
Yep, we'll shoot over to Cam now.
We're looking pretty – like it's an odd one this year. Like we've had good rain recently, but we had super dry, like the rest of sort of Victoria, super dry. Autumn was a non-event from a rainfall point of view. So where like streams aren't exactly high, put it that way. So
yeah, I see. I think there's a bit of rain forecast for, or at least, you know, the Eildon catchment on Friday. Are you guys getting some of that up there too?
I think we are, but I don't think it's not, we're going to need significant rain.
I think there's only 6 mil on the way on Friday.
Yeah.
Because I'm heading up to Bright. It's nothing. Like 0 to 6 mil too. So it could rain.
Right.
Could not.
Yeah.
So you're heading up to Bright too?
I'm going to Bright on Friday. Yeah.
Oh, geez. Everyone's going there.
I'll let your tires down, Pete.
If you see a Mazda MX-5 with the roof down and, you know, the out-of-work Italian actor sitting in it, that's Peter.
Just let you know, it gets a bit weird in those pines around Bright, Pete, so it may or may not be me.
Good, mate. So how is the ovens actually looking right now, mate? What, water level-wise, where would you put it?
Water level wise, probably should have looked at it before I had this phone call. I'd say we'd sort of be a late sort of spring level.
Right. Okay. Which could be quite pleasant, no? For
hopefully. Oh, definitely. It's kind of like I'm normally telling people and helping people like get them dialed in on smaller feeder streams. early season because like the main rivers are typically running quite hard, but this year everywhere is going to be basically fishable.
Cool.
So even look, just drove up this morning, like one of my other haunts there, sort of above Cancoban, and all the little creeks and stuff aren't running. Like I've definitely fished them in years past where we've had more water in summer than what they've got in them now.
Yeah.
So kind of just sitting back and waiting. My gut feeling is we're still going to get some decent rain this spring. But right now, probably couldn't really ask for better opening conditions. So,
yeah, I guess that's the thing. You know, we're all hoping that things are going to – we'll get to that rain and, you know, that really good sort of high water that can get us through summer. But if that's not the case, then would you encourage people to get out earlier this season?
Definitely. I wouldn't be holding back. Like you mightn't be doing that classic dry fly fishing that you come up our way to do just yet, but like still even nymph under dry, a lot of situations will get your fish. But yeah, keen on your nymphing, you can get dirty and euro or under an indicator, you're just not gonna need significant weight to get near the bottom and be in the fish's face basically. So if anything, it's going to be a lot more pleasant fishing. Yeah, and a few less rod tips broken early on, which often happens.
Do you prefer like an indicator nymph rig? Is that sort of how you will head out at the start of this season, do you think?
I appreciate how good your own nymphing is, don't get me wrong. If anything, I'd kind of call what I do now almost like a hybrid system. So if needed, like for the average person, we can put a small indicator on there so they got that visual cue, but a lot of the time we're still fishing tight line techniques, if that makes sense. So it's still at least a longish leader with a that indicator might be quite close to the flies, or we might put it up, but we're still fishing quite tight to it. So that indicator's there if we need a dead drift and nymph through a deeper pocket, or we can just tight line it and run it through a run sort of thing, and you're still feeling the take. So
good, mate.
Yeah.
And the other streams in the Bright region, you know, the Kiwa you get to a fair bit, don't you?
Yeah, look, if you do a 1.5-2 hour circle around downtown Mudgee-Gonga, then that's pretty much my sort of area that I'm on the most.
Downtown Mudgee.
Mudgee-Gonga. Not to be confused with Mudgee, where all the wine's made and stuff in New South Wales.
But. Right. Are there traffic lights here yet, mate?
We finally got rid of the traffic lights after the bridge down the road got repaired after a year and a half.
Got rid of them. Great.
Yeah.
So same sort of deal, you know, on say the Kiwa to the Ovens early season. What sort of things and areas can we look at in that Bright area?
Anywhere you've heard that there's trout or maybe a trout. So you've mentioned two of the bigger ones, any river that runs in or creek that runs into either of those two.
Morses Creek, pretty solid through early season.
Never heard of it, but yeah, it can be.
That's Morses.
It can be. It'd be a little bit. Look, it fishes better. You're pulling a few gems out here, doing well. It fishes a lot better when it's got a bit of flow to it.
Yeah.
And hand on heart, I'll tell you now before the season opens that the bulk of our rainbows haven't spawned yet. We are in this, I don't think they're out of whack. I think it's why they're so successful, but the last sort of, 15 years, I've sort of really kept a close eye on it. And I've regularly seen rainbow spawning well into November, week in November. And it's purely a rainfall thing. They hold back and wait for a decent pulse of water to come down.
Yep.
So just keep that in mind. If you catch that nice 2-pound rainbow and she's got a belly full of eggs, or she just seems overly fat, just treat her with a bit of extra care.
Oh, that's good. Good tip, yeah. Mate. Yeah. Yeah. So what, just keep them wet, you know, that kind of thing, and get the hook out quick and let them go.
Yeah. Look, we're pretty lucky. Like when you think about it, like here I am up in the Snowies now, and like everyone talks about rainbow trout in the Snowy Mountains, but keep in mind that we've got this amazing wild fishery based off rainbows and browns. And I think the reason is they're just the rainbows have adapted quite well to when we typically get that nice flow of water out of the hills and spawn on that. So, but yeah, it's look everywhere. I don't think anywhere is not going to be worth having a look. Even down all the eel and feeders, those sort of places as well. North of us, the mid is looking quite good at the moment too, below Dartmouth. And yeah, for a bit bigger river,
yep,
I'll probably be drifting that pretty quickly in this season. So it's at a beautiful height.
Good.
Bug wise, not much is fired up yet. I did cut a bit of firewood the other day and noticed that there's ants already with wings in the ground ready to come out. So that may be an indicator that things are going to warm up pretty quickly soon. And yeah, I don't think it will be too long and we'll have reasonable hatch-based fishing as well.
Fingers crossed, mate. The, you know, obviously it's making a lot of news, but the cormorant thing, did they get into your area and have much impact, would you say?
Yeah, I sort of take it. I did listen to your podcast with Phil and as you know, I've got a pretty big head, like even a Sims cap, I have to order them in a custom size. So I'm not saying these things to try and big note myself, but it's definitely, like Phil said, it's definitely a cycle thing. You can nearly count on it every 8 to 10 years that we're going to have plenty of cormorants move up into the hills. All it is those stream, like it's not streams at all. It's just those ephemeral lakes way out west. So think of places like lower down on the Murray, Darling, Lachlan. So all, say the start of that 10-year cycle, you've got 3-4 years where you can, I know from all my research work, you can be out there and it's just like cormorant city. They're out there going nuts on things like bony brim and stuff that boom and bust out there. Then we get to the end of that cycle and all these birds are just looking for a feed. So there's a power of birds on Lake Eucombe at the moment, actually, cormorants and pelicans working together. So, but yeah, look, they definitely had an impact. There's still plenty of fish they didn't eat. What I was regularly seeing was, especially towards the end of the season, it was kind of a dual effect. I'd say there was fish there that were in sort of pre-spawn mode, combined with pressure from cormorants. And if you've ever been on the thread bow that you can be in sort of before the run sort of starts, you'll often get those bigger pools. You often won't see a fish for a while and then you'll hit a pool and it'll just be loaded with like basically a school of trout swimming around. And we saw that a lot even down around home and higher up in the hills this past season, like April into May. And yeah, look, there was cormorants around, but we had days there where we might go half the day and hardly see a fish, and then you'll just hit a wall of fish in one hole and you'll run a nymph through them, catch a few, and then you're like, oh, this is going to turn into Groundhog Day sort of pretty quick. So you keep moving on. But yeah, I'd say that was combined cormorant and pre-spawn sort of thing. But yeah, look, they definitely ate a few fish. There was plenty of white rocks around, but
have they moved on to a certain degree now, would you say? Or are they something that's going to be with us for the season?
No, I think they've moved. Without getting out and about like I can if I'm guiding and fishing, I'd say, yeah, look, there may be a few around, but from what I've seen lately, most of them seem to have dropped back at least onto the lakes and terrorising fish there. So,
good.
Yeah, it's... If you're still doing podcasts in 8-10 years, you'll probably be talking about cormorants again. That's more.
Probably. We always need material anyway, mate. So we don't want to be without a job, you know. So
that's it.
That's all right. Yeah, and let's just talk a little bit about you and what you've got on offer for the early season fishermen up there at Bright. Have you got any guiding availability in the next couple of months?
Yeah, definitely. it's for people in Melbourne, I don't want the normal pattern to happen where Melbourne and Sydney, that you wait until the weather gets good at home and think that, oh, it must be good up the hills, because more than likely we've probably been good for the month before you think the weather's just got good. So September, October, I've still got some good availability. November is when I typically get busy. So if you're thinking November, I'll be thinking about it pretty early. November's just that amazing month when everything starts to fire, but from a bug point, from hatch point of view especially. But I'd say this year that I'd say that's going to kick off a bit earlier. That's my gut feeling. I think October is going to be really good.
Cool, mate. And what sort of guiding packages do you have on offer?
Day trips, multi-day trips. Still running half days if you're happy to get in and around, like closer stuff like Bright especially. The full gamut. Just book your accommodation. Some guy will come and pick you up in probably a dirty Prado, and we'll get out there for the day.
Awesome, mate.
And keep in mind too, if we're up around Cancoban, or even if you're based somewhere like the Mitter Valley, or you don't even have to be based in the Mitter Valley. If you're based sort of within an hour of the Mitter Valley, we can easily do a drift one day and then get on foot other days from that.
We've obviously had you on the podcast before talking cod, and that is just such a big part of what you do and a real passion of yours there, mate. The idea of combining cod and trout early season, is that realistic?
It's more than realistic. It's we can easily do it in one day. I don't necessarily tell people to do it in one day because you want to sort of get the most out of both fishing experiences, but if you're really pressed for time, we can do it in one day. I think that's probably the sheer beauty of our area. I'd argue that nowhere else you can easily go from cod and to trout and do it one or other in the morning or the afternoon sort of thing. And this at the moment, the ovens is probably running. That's probably a better gauge now. Think about it, looking at it from one of my spots the other day, cod spots lower down, that, we're probably at an early summer height if you went off an average of the last few years. But, I think that's the big take-home message at the moment. I don't think anything's normal now if you think about it. So every year's definitely different.
Yeah, definitely, mate. Anything you'd like to ask there, Peter?
I need all the secret cod spots this weekend, please.
just to drop a few pins.
Come December, we'll talk. No. There's not too many secrets now. It's we've obviously got that amazing wild based fishery in the ovens. It's if anything gets peed, it's probably, I'd say seasonal is the thing that you want to, and that's what I've always sort of pushed. Different areas fish better at different times of the season. So
no, good, Cam. It's just amazing to be able to combine that cod fishing with the trout fishing and doing it in a day.
It's the ultimate Aussie experience.
Yeah.
You know, like, who doesn't want to catch trout, obviously? But, the cod are just that quintessential native fish species that everyone wants to tick off.
The camouflage trout.
They look like an Indigenous painting, though, don't they? They're just beautiful. Yeah.
Especially when they bite on your thumb and leave a mark and
cod thumb.
You'd just about have nothing but scar tissue there by now, wouldn't you, mate, with all the cod you've caught?
Well, actually, that's got me thinking. In between blackberries, I've been murdering a few of them lately at home on the farm, but there's probably a couple of marks on my right hand that I'd probably say were from fish over the years.
Sure beats a tattoo.
Yeah. Actually one don't rule out. And I've just tried to push this at the VWF annual meeting, and obviously it mightn't have been the best crowd to do it to, but I know I'm talking with people that enjoy their flats fishing and you too, and I'll happily travel to some far-flung destination and catch some saltwater fish that's going to pull a lot of cord. But if you're not, like, I've been a long-time devotee of carp and fly, and it's starting to gain a bit of momentum, but honestly, if I need to just chill out now, well, not necessarily chill out, because believe it or not, carp aren't that easy, but the flats fishing we have on offer in the fresh water, when you get out and actually pick your spots and like wade polaroiding or just stalking edges, like if you've got a bonefish trip coming up or any, like I don't know, if you're on your way to Hinchinbrook to try and win a fishing competition, for example, probably would have been a good spot to go. Yeah, it would have been a good spot to go and do a bit of practice. Like the amount of times now we've gone from like, oh, Riardo, we'll go and like, this is Katie and I, let's go catch carp for a couple of weeks and just get dialed in before we go and do that trip to Hawaii or somewhere on bonefish. And it's, the crossover is just so, yeah, it's just so on point. It's not funny. So.
I know, mate. Yeah, it's a hard thing, isn't it? They're still just carp. Yeah, but as you say, the way it can dial you as a fly fisher is pretty good. So, yeah, I'd love to do that with you one day. But it you know, for me, it would be such a trade off from the cod and the trout when you're in that area, I guess. Yeah. But it'd be a bit of a weather and conditions type thing, time of year thing too, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Spring, once it warms up in the spring, you got like typically got lakes starting to rise a bit under. Doesn't have to be new ground as long as they're just coming up a little bit. And yeah, they all just suck in on the edges. It's pretty good. I've got a few clients now where they'll come down each year and do, and it's probably been happening for the last 5-6 years. They might have 4 or 5 days booked in with me and they're asking to go out on the carp at least one of those days now. And that's when we're in the thick of trout and cod. So.
Magic, mate. So many options up there, hey? You know, like, and of course, you know, I dare say no one's got it as well dialed as you do up there. A little bit, your background is in as a fisheries scientist, basically, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Yeah, Ree. I didn't sit down as long at a computer as what Katie does. I'm still a little bit allergic to a computer.
You can be honest and just say she's smarter than you, mate. It's okay.
Nah, she just learnt. She just went to uni for a bit longer. That was all that was. Different smarts, mate. Different smarts. Nah, she's pretty clever. But yeah, it's yeah, I'm still, and look, I still go back and do a lot of research work, especially through Charles Sturt University these days, where Katie's also based as a fishery scientist. But I'm basically coming and going from field work opportunities. So working predominantly these days on Macquarie perch, and we've got a really interesting study lower down in the Murray with golden perch, and we'll probably add silver perch this year to that off the back of environmental water and just watching fish move around. Different water pulses. So
it's one of the things I love when I'm fishing with you, mate, is getting that kind of insight and the conversations we have around, you know, the fisheries and how dynamic they are and all the other stuff. But, you know, I can't say or recommend you highly enough as a guide in the Ovens area. And I encourage anyone that's listening to this episode to look you up and get in touch. They can obviously find you. It's River Escapes, riverescapes.com.au.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool, mate. But yeah, if you need a guided day up there, get in touch with Cam and you will have one of the best trips of your life, I'm sure. Thank you, Cam, for that, mate. That was awesome, you know, to hear what's happening up at in the Bright area. Obviously, so many options up there by the sounds too, hey? Like there's the cod and the trout that you can realistically do in one day. I mean, that sounds sensational, doesn't it?
Oh, that's amazing. And especially you can jump over to a different catchment too. Like you can jump over to the Kiowa. You know, it's 40 minutes. It's nothing. If you want to take it a bit further, you can go to the Mitter if you want, you know.
Yeah.
There's just so much there.
Yeah, and it is an area where if you look at a topographical map, you realise just how many options there are there in the small stream stuff. So yeah, for the more adventurous kind of backcountry angler, that place is just a playground.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also in that one, what I really enjoyed was getting a bit more insight as to the cormorants, you know, and their impact on the fishing. Obviously, you know, we don't like it, but nobody who knows is really that concerned because we know just how quickly these trout fisheries can recover.
I know, we've seen it after, you know, we have bushfires, years of low water, you know, you look at the Hauqua, everyone wrote that off in the drought, and now look at it. How many fish do you want to catch, you know?
These fisheries are dynamic and it just pays to adapt accordingly.
It's a cycle of life, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Thanks, Cam. Great to hear from you, mate. And anyone that wants to look up Cam, of course, riverescapes.com.au. And now we're going to talk to our mate, Jimmy Barwick, up in Tumut. Jimmy, obviously, unbelievable on the oars when it comes to drift boat fishing, and has that catchment, the Snowy Mountains, so well wide for people that want to go and explore that area. His passion is obviously chasing very, very large cod on a fly rod through winter. He's been doing a lot of that through winter with huge success. You're about to hear a bit more about that. Jimmy, obviously, that area I think is an experience that every fly fisher ought to get up there and do. I think it is a little bit further from Melbourne to get to, but for people from Sydney, it's very, very realistic. Honestly, you could fly up there as well. It's not hard to get there and have one of the most memorable trips that you're ever likely to have.
We hear like almost hundreds of fish being caught in a day out of those drift boats. Like,
that's right.
It's insane. And the variety of fishing you can do out of them too.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. That Tumut River in particular is an absolute fish factory, as I think we go on to say in this. But look, it's, The other thing you've got there is the Swampy Plains, which is within such close proximity. So if you really want to experience two very different drift boat fisheries, book a few days, cover the Tumut and the Swampy. It's a hell of an experience.
Absolutely. And there's a sprinkling of small creek stuff up there too, isn't there?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, Jimmy guides all through the Snowy Mountains and he's got the place so well wide. And of course, who's to say what's going to happen in a month's time? You know, like we're still a month from the Snowy Mountain season opening. For anyone that does want to get up there and experience this stuff and wants to book Jimmy, get in quick. He does book out. It may be more about the small streams come start of October, or it may be more about the drift boat fishing. But if you want the advice on what's going to be best, then Jimmy's your man.
He is, and a bloody fun guy to fish with.
There's quite a number of guides in that area now. Jimmy, from the get-go, has been one of those guys that I've really clicked with. You know, we kind of our passion is matched for trout fishing, and our interest in other species is matched as well. But the banter is just so good on the boat, and he gets the best out of me when I'm fishing with him, which I think is any good guide does that. They seem to be able to just motivate the angler to that next little tier that makes them more productive, and every cast counts.
Almost like a coach, you know, pushing you to be
100%.
I think that's the best analogy, you know.
It is. Yeah, it is. Without it being work, it's still fun. And that's the thing, you know, it's about this healthy balance, and you get that out of any expert fly fishing guide, of which Jimmy Barwick is one of them. So let's get into it now, and we'll have a chat to Jimmy Barwick. Jimmy Barwick, based in Tumut, Snowy Valleys Fly Fishing is his business. He knows the Snowy Mountains area probably better than anyone we know here at the Fly Fisher, and is certainly our guide of choice up there. Jimmy, this is your first little time on the podcast, mate. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me here, Andrew. It's been a bit of a while coming. We had some plans in the past there, but they didn't line up. But
What happened there, though? That was Damo and I when we came up and fished with you. And we lugged all that podcast gear up there and then drank too many beers to actually record anything.
Yeah, I think the wine too, and Harrison might have been the wild card in amongst that.
Oh, he's a bad influence, that guy. Yeah.
Yeah, I think once the juices got flowing there, I don't think anyone was too keen to put it down. I think Damo even had it all set up as well, and then we just flagged it.
but of course, Damo didn't touch a drop, being slightly underage.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, absolutely. We kept it PG. And so your season, you're obviously New South Wales there, so it doesn't open for another month, is that correct?
That is 100% correct, mate. From the 5th of October, we start up out here. Lakes have been open, but the river's closed up. And, yes, we've got a little bit longer to go compared to you guys and a fair bit behind Tassie.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's a bit, I don't know, a blessing or a curse. I reckon right now it'd be fantastic out there in the water, but I guess it is what it is.
It looks like your trout season there in New South Wales closes for a month longer than Victoria and Tasmania.
Yeah. And I believe the speculation is it's in due line with the rainbow trout spawning, if that's, you know, if that's what I can put it to. And, you know, exactly what reason why they keep it prolonged closed. Not 100% sure why, but...
I'm sure there's some science behind it, but it just builds the anticipation.
It does. And, you know, in earnest, the weather starts getting good from here out and... you know, they've just been my client from today drove over from Jindabyne and said she was driving across fresh snow and ice on the road. So, you know, it's not much time to be up there in the high country, but down here in the lowland rivers, you know, it would have been a mile 20 here today, not a cloud in sight.
Oh, beautiful.
Gorgeous.
How is it shaping up water wise for you there?
It's looking fantastic. I mean, for me, operating on Blower and Dam over the course of winter, I've watched it come up 35-odd%, which equates to a lot of volume. In conjunction with Eucanbean going down, they've been moving water through the system, and they actually just opened up the tap today. We've now got 7,000 meg coming down the river, which is fantastic for drifting.
Yep.
But the land-based angle is potentially not so... usable, but it lines up for some great opportunities on the raft out here, and in turn will sort of have us into some great fishing straight off the mark, I reckon, this season.
Good, mate. Yeah, and of course, you know, the Tumut River being your home river and your base of guiding operations. Let's talk a little bit about how it fishes at the start of the season. Is it you know, good quality fishing at that time of year?
Mate, absolutely. One of the joys of the Tumut is you can pick it apart in many different ways. The mainstay would be the indicator nymphing. You know, love it or hate it, it's a fantastic way to get out there and into fish from anglers of all abilities. There will be some opportunities for wily browns in the slack water, which will be more than happy to come up and, if you're lucky, maybe take a fly off the top, but if not, grab the nymph underneath. And as it progresses into the warmth of summer, you'll see, you know, the mayfly and caddis hatches will sort of come and go. The Tumut is a bit of a double-edged sword for that one. You know, evening rise tends to be, you know, half an hour, an hour before dusk. On the Tumut, it's probably 5 minutes before the lights are out. And it seems that every fish in the river hits the surface all at the same time. And then as quick as they come, they disappear. So... and that will then go into the hopper season, you know, come after December, which if it's anything to go by last year, it would be an absolute corker and really keen for that. So that all sort of comes in with those high volume flows, you know, fish pushed up on the edges and pretty keen to eat those big chunky morsels that blunder their way onto the surface.
Awesome, mate. And that just to paint a bit of a picture, the Tumut's a tail race?
Yeah. So the Tumut's fed from Blowering Dam, which is at the bottom of five dams above. The water from here effectively goes out west to supply the irrigation demands of the cotton, rice and almonds out through the Griffith area. And they've got a small substation on here that they generate. I don't exactly know what version of electricity out of, but by the time it comes to Blowering, it's been for irrigation use, and they send it down the line. So as they've been priming it up, getting it up to, I think it was at 86% the last time I checked, they've opened the gates up now. I guess the warmth in the air is sort of, you know, sort of peak time for irrigations, and this will now continue the whole way through summer.
So it's pretty consistent, the amount of water that they let out, is it, through October?
It is nonstop from October, November, December, and into January too. You know, that we'll see high volumes of 6,000 plus meg, up to 9,000 through the duration of those months. Yeah,
which is great for trout, really, isn't it? They don't have to adjust to the constant fluctuations as much.
Well, no, I mean, and the tournament fish in particular are quite used to it, although, you know, the winter months have had it static at a very low volume, especially under the dam wall. Once the Gooba Gandra comes in, which is three quarters of the way down, it's the astrological events, I guess you could say, or meteorological events would be the more appropriate one. You know, you get a big rain event, it dumps water down and it settles itself. Whereas the river proper itself under the dam, it's a nice, cool, consistent rate. In that space, they're used to it bouncing around. So it works really good with the river. It's effectively like a bit of a reset. You know, you might be fishing at a consistent 6,000 meg. They might drop it down half the volume, so the fish have got to reshuffle, and then they pump it back up to 7,500 or 8,000. It's like a big reshuffle again. It's a big flush of the toilet bowl, I guess you could say. And everyone shuffles around positions and sets up camp, and your different browns established in certain backwaters, and, you know, the best rainbows will be sitting through their runs. And it works really well for the river, and also to the sort of frequency of people running down it, or, you know, under their own craft or on a guided venture.
Cool, mate. Yeah. I mean, you know, having experienced that Tumut River with you, it is just a fish factory, isn't it?
Oh, mate, it's out of control. I mean, numbers aren't everything, but you can come out here and have some ridiculously big days on the nymphing program. If you've got the energy for it, like young Damo, you can get out there and slap the bank with a streamer and rip and repeat. And if you're a bit more cultured like yourself and I, we can you know, chuck a bit of foam with a lightly weighted nymph underneath it and wait for that moment to happen. So it's really good, the diversity and sort of, it's got something for everyone, for more anglers of all abilities and sort of whatever your preference is, you know, we can definitely accommodate to it.
For sure, mate. And you've obviously got some other rivers that you guide on.
Yeah. So we've got the nearest proximity for us here with trout is the Swampy Plains at Cancoven. That is a fantastic fishery in its own right. A little bit of a different sort of scene with it, with probably, you'd say, a better backdrop to the Tumut, although there's nothing wrong with the landscape here. Having that sort of Kosciuszko Range up behind you there and the wider glides and riffles really sets up for a pretty specky place. A keynote in there, super keen to get over for the opening of the season in that sort of first month. The Cozzy Duns and Caddis Hatches are a sight to be seen and something that's really, really worthwhile taking advantage of from the boat. There's nothing quite like hitting a fish on the drift, you know.
So those hatches get going pretty early, do they, on the Swampy?
Yeah, you know, the mayflies with that nice, cool, consistent water, they keep it up and get it all moving. And once that gets going, yeah, it should be pretty decent hatch to be a part of, yeah, for sure.
Good, mate. What about small stream options? Have you got some stuff that you do there?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, being on the doorstep of Kosciuszko National Park, just in my immediate area here, there's a couple of the lowland rivers in this immediate area that fish really quite good at the beginning of the season, but there's still that sort of natural, maybe you could say, snow melt or accumulation from spring rains coming off the ranges. You know, within half an hour drive, there's a couple of small fast waters, you know, you sort of a little putt-putt golf, you know, three-weight territory, and then you go up into the upper versions of the Murrumbidgee and Eucombine, which will, you know, they'll fish strong through the opening of the season at a glance. Just on driving past the other day, unfortunately, at the demise of Selwyn Snowpack, he's gone down pretty much into the Eucombine River, and it's running the fullest I've seen in a lot of months. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All winter. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, it's all poised to be a pretty good start to the season here, I'd say. Yeah.
Yeah. And are you kind of hoping for some mild temperatures quite early? Do you think that'll really get things moving?
Well, mate, if it stays on the same trend as what it is now, I mean, we were topping 25, 26 degrees towards the end of August there, which is, you know, you could say it's a bit unseasonable. With any luck, it continues on. You know, I suppose it's looking into the crystal ball. I don't even think the weather services have much of a prediction. I heard the word green drought get thrown around by a few of the clients.
Oh, I love that.
So, a few of the cattle farmers from down on the Murray, you know, they seem to have, well, I suppose he's been in the game since, you know, he's 86, one of them, and he's been out there for a long time. I'd take his sort of vote on what's going to happen. But, Yeah, like if it stays like this, we should be in for some pretty decent fishing straight off the bat. Yeah.
Cool, mate. That's good. Yeah. Let's. I want to hear more about the products that you have on offer, as in guided days and packages. What is it that you offer your clients?
Well, I mean, I think variety is the spice of life. Personally, for us, in you know, somebody who grew up chasing trout from a boat in Tassie, you know, something that I've really wanted to bring into the business here. So. You know, got ourselves a custom-built boat specifically set out for that side of things. So we can go out on, you can be in Tantangra, Talbingo, and throw streamers if that's your game. We can pull teams of wets off the drogue. You know, we can go out and target a whole bunch of different fish and sort of different aspects. One of the main ones that I got the boat set up for here was to chase the big cod up in Blowering Dam on the fly. That's proven to be quite a successful little venture with the people who have come out this year or this winter so far, having some great success, which is unreal.
Yeah, I think for any listeners that are curious about this empowerment-based cod fishing that Jimmy's doing, they should check out your Instagram page because you have been absolutely crushing it through winter, mate. The size of those fish is insane, isn't it?
I tell you what, they are honestly a sight to be seen, and like, you take it for granted. I mean, just went out and took a mate the other night, but I called it as a, you know, it's an honest fish, a 95. It's nothing to squint at, you know. So it's just a little one, and he's the first one he's seen. Like, and he's, oh, you've got to be joking! Like, this is monster. I said,
yeah,
it is. Like, don't get me wrong, but I mean, like, you add an extra 10 centimeters, and it's a whole nother class. Another 10 on that, and it's a whole nother again. You know, like. The biggest I've pinned so far is a 129, and I can barely even deal with that. I don't even worry about trying to, like, look, I'd love to have the ultimate grip and grin photo, but it just ends up coming at the cost of the fish. So I get this sort of B-grade video and sort of deal with that. But in that way, I'm able to get this monster on the deck, deal with it, get the shitty video, and then stick him back in the drink. And with any luck, we can have another crack at him another time, as opposed to him going belly up because I, you know, wanted to stroke my own ego and try and get the old, you know, look at this, I've got another big one, you know, like.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And I guess, you know, that's worth talking about for a second because, you know, these fish are old, you know, slow growing fish that should be treasured. And,
absolutely.
You know, it's probably likely that a lot of these, there's not as many of these fish as we think, you know, like they have their spots. They're probably quite territorial, you know, like there's, if you looked at the economic value of each Murray cod, I reckon they'd be one of the more valuable fish.
Oh, most certainly, especially like the prestige that they hold. Although that prestige, if you listen to other sort of facets of the fishing world, would say that it's been ruined, you know, with the influx of using forward-facing sonar and all the rest of it. But you put that aside, you know, the fish themselves, they're a sight to be seen. Their value to you personally and, you know, on an economical standpoint, you know, it's hard to put a price on it. They are, you've got to get one in your hand. Well, it's not even like, it's all over you, you know. It's like you can't just pick it up and hold it out. You're wearing it. Hey, this big slimy green thing. you're struggling. You're gasping for air. And I'm asking you really nice, fools, you just stay still, mate. I'm gonna try and get this quick shot of you. So you know,
yeah.
Oh, Jimmy, I can't hold him up anymore. You know.
Yeah,
and they're unreal. They're unreal.
They're definitely one of those fish. You know, when you do get a hold of them, you want to look after them. I think it's almost like they command respect. They're distinguished.
a 1,000%. You're like, you know, you see someone's grip and grin and you're like, oh, yeah, it's a pretty decent fish. You see it for yourself. And like all the people that I've had on board this winter that have you know, put them on and in the net, which has been all the fly clients that have come out have had great success. And they are just in such awe of the size, what it went to get it there, you know. Not only is it about, you know, looking into the dark on a screen, you know, you put that aside, you've got to make the cast with a chunky, huge fly. You've got to sink it down. You go through the processes and XYZ lines up and you come up tight. And then you're trying to pull the plug out of Blowering Dam, for example.
Yeah.
You know, they're not exactly the world's most glorious spiders, I guess you could say, on those giant models.
Oh, but the weight, you know, strip striking into something that heavy must just be electric.
It just stops. It stops dead. Dunk, and then you pick the rod up and the rod tip stayed down.
Yeah.
And then he lights up and you've just got to try and rodeo this thing.
Wow.
You keep your rod down and you hang on. You don't. Yeah. You're pushing 40 till it's absolute. Yeah. And rods, like you're pushing gear. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I called you to talk just about early season trout fishing, but we've taken a little segue. But it is obviously a big part of what you're doing up there and trying to tap into. And when October, November, early season, when the rivers are open, is it realistic to do a trout fishing / cod fishing trip with you? If I booked you for a week, do you think you could do both?
Mate, absolutely, 100%. We could. If the stars aligned, we could do the both in the same day. But hypothetically, over the course of 2 days, we can drift a couple of sections of the same river and be in with legitimate shots, targeting trout, not just targeting trout, but having fantastic trout fishing on day one. Change the gear over, pull the eights and tens out the next day and go and pepper the snags and edges with big chunky flies.
Yeah. All you need is Red Bull and no dose and you can do anything.
Mate, that's exactly it. Yeah, you get out there and look, your arm will, you know, if you're serious about it, you probably won't have much of an arm left. But it's worth it because that crunch, you know, especially in the rivers from the raft, you know, you're just on that rinse and repeat cycle. The more times you can keep it in zone, the more chance that it's going to get ploughed. And, you know, you fish surface in the morning, it's unreal. Change over and then, you know, you get the chance of getting slammed anywhere from as soon as it hits the water to just as you're taking it out of the boat. As we had one the other day here, fly was literally coming up out of the water and this is out of the raft and, you know, this big green monster just appears. Wow. And all of a sudden you pause and crack off the top and then it's a, you know, you've got yourself a sprightly sort of 75 from the river, which is just burying you back into its, you know, just going ham. So,
yeah,
across the board, mate, smiles for miles. And as you can tell, I get pretty excited about it. I love it. Hey, I'm not going to lie to you. Fuzzy.
I know you do. I've seen it firsthand.
But we wait until once December 1st comes around. She only just closed, but
yeah.
Once the season comes around, we'll go out and tick a few boxes there, mate. Looking forward to it.
That'd be awesome, mate. Yeah, and no, I seriously look forward to getting back up to the Tumut area with you. That area and the fishing that you've got on offer there is absolutely spectacular. And I think anyone that hasn't experienced it ought to. Obviously, you know, Jimmy, Snowy Valley's fly fishing and your website, snowyvalleysflyfishing.com.au.
Yep.
Cool, mate.
Yeah, all the information's up on there. I mean, for those who are keen, jump on and sign up to the newsletter. You get sort of first-hand info on new products that are being launched or new experiences and anything like that.
You do quite a few email promos and things, like you just had a Father's Day one that's just been and gone?
Yeah, had the Father's Day promo, sort of giving it back to the dads.
Good.
I myself am not one yet, but I grew up with a keen-ass father who got me, I guess you could see where I am now. And, you know, it's great. More one of my personal faves out on the river with the drift, you know, for the trout. Father-son duo is, you know, or you can say in a proverbial sense, you know, you and Damo, just so much fun, you know.
Father, like, figure, and son.
Yeah, father, figure, and son. That's exactly, you know, you see the dynamic.
Sorry, Damo, I'm just claiming myself a father figure for you.
But no, it's a great way, you know, like, you know, be it the fathers who are a bit older, or you get the, you know, the fathers who are a bit younger and they bring the young tacker along with them. It's a hoot across the board. It's such a great thing to experience with you know, someone who's close to you like that.
Totally, mate. Yeah, I know. I'll be back to Tumut every year to fish with you because it is that special. But, mate, it's great to get you finally on the podcast and really appreciate you giving us some early season info there on what's happening in the Snowy Mountains. And, when it rolls around, what is it, October 1st?
The 5th. Long weekend. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, she's game on.
And you've got some guiding availability sort of early in the season at the moment?
Yeah, so as it's progressing, October itself hasn't got a huge amount of days left. I think as I'm glancing at the calendar now, there is, I think, 3 days to fill.
Yep.
And then November's got some availabilities in there. So if anyone's keen, feel free to reach out and come and lock in your session. It's definitely something to be experienced for sure.
Awesome, mate. No, that's great. Really appreciate you having a chat with us, mate. And we'll get up there very soon for a fish.
Mate, not a problem at all. And thank you very much. Looking forward to seeing you guys back out again for round two. We'll see if we can put on as much of a show as what we did last time.
Look forward to it, buddy. Cheers, mate.
For sure. Cheers.
See you, mate. Jimmy, thank you, mate. That was awesome.
I'm so excited. I just need to get on all these places.
Yeah. You never run out of places to go, do you? You know, I think this is the thing with fly fishing. But the point I'd make is that Tumut, the Snowy Mountains, that is a place I will go back to year after year. It is that good.
And make a trip out of it. Don't go for a day. You know, there's so much to do there. It's not worth.
Bloody oath. Yeah. Yeah. And in just a day, even 2 days, you're scratching the surface. You're not getting that well-rounded fishing experience of the area. Because in particular, the Swampy and the Tumut are two very, very different rivers and fish totally different to each other. So, yeah, if you really want to get a taste of it, make sure you've got time on your hands.
And you mentioned quality fish in the Swampy and numbers of fish in the Tumut.
Generally speaking, this is the thing. Like the Swampy hatches a big mayfly. The trout are generally quite large, and it's probably more a brown trout fishery than it is a rainbow trout fishery. Whereas in the Tumut, it switches around a bit. It's perhaps more a rainbow trout fishery than it is a brown trout fishery. But to anyone that combs through social media, you see a lot of big brown trout coming out of the Tumut as much as you do the Swampy. So it's not a hard and fast rule, but the way the fisheries are, they're quite different. And I think, you know, it demands a different skill set, a different approach. And without a guy like Jimmy, you would struggle, but you want to experience both.
Absolutely. That's enough about everyone else's fishing.
Oh, yeah.
What are you doing this weekend?
Of course, yeah. So the opening of the trout season this Saturday. Is it from midnight?
I think it's from 11:59 on Friday night.
All right.
That's when closed season ends, and then Saturday, go for it.
There'll probably be a few keen beans out there at 12 o'clock, won't there?
Yeah, we had Dan in just then talking about how he's putting his headlamp on.
Yeah, apparently night fishing on the Rubicon's pretty good.
That's a secret.
Sorry, Dan, you might have some company up there on Friday night, mate. It's an exciting time. For me personally, I really enjoy the social aspect of opening season and close of season. I'll be heading up to a good mate's place up at Mary Jig. He's got a bunch of fellas that are going to be there, and we'll be, drinking too much and celebrating by catching a few trout. So it should be good.
That's awesome. So you'll hit the Dalatite most likely around.
Dalatite or Hakwa. It's pretty easy to shoot over to the Hakwa from there for a day. So we'll see. Yeah, it'll just depend a bit on how much rain we get on that Friday, I think. Realistically, we might actually do both.
That's pretty good. Like, it's another one of those fisheries, you know, you got the Dalatite, the Hakwa, the Upper Goulburn. We're spoiled, aren't we?
I mean,
just unbelievable.
Yeah, you're like a kid in a candy shop, really, aren't you, at this time of year? You know, like, where do you go? And, of course, you know, we're obviously talking early season, opening season, rivers. That's, you know, the jewel, if you like. But you can't discount the lake fishing at this time of year too.
No, I want to give a big shout out to the lakes. I had a bit of success myself on Saturday, and I may have received a cheeky photo from Philip Weigel of a very, very nice fish out of either Newlyn or Hepburn, which two lakes at this time of year, amazing.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to see good dun hatches, good mayfly hatches, midge hatches. You know, there could be some good spring rain to push the water up onto new ground, and we can look for those tailing fish. It's exciting.
Yeah. Who's to say, you know, what's going to happen? Again, looking at this crystal ball, but I'm still optimistic we're going to get some decent spring rain. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if we get this kind of opening to the season where things are almost of a late spring level, but then we get that dump of rain and it really freshens things up and keeps things going through summer.
Yeah, I think the best way Cam described it was like a pulse of rain or river, and like that'll kick the rainbows into spawning mode and, you know, kick the lakes onto, you know, potentially rising into new ground, which is rising lakes.
Good fishing. Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's no normal. There never has been any normal season, I would say. But yeah, this one's certainly going to throw up a few challenges, I would say. And, you know, who's to say what to expect? But for the more dynamic, adaptable fly fisher, I think you're in for some fun.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, hope you've enjoyed the listen, folks. Yeah, certainly has been great chatting to our guide mates, and really appreciate their input. Of course, don't forget to like, follow and subscribe. And we hope you tune in to the next episode. Cheers.